From mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's live every Saturday, the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub. Saturday nights right here on News Radio 570 WWNC plus AM 1400, and they don't call it the talk of the mountains for nothing. You know, much of what is celebrated during the Christmas season has strong roots in pagan tradition. In fact, like so many holidays, it has become, especially in this country, a strange mixture of pagan and Christian symbology. Well, this coming week, my new free museum will finally open, probably around 1 o'clock, we'll say, on Monday. And one of the exhibits features the saga of Lady Passion and Diove, and they are of Coven Ovenwild, which they founded here in Asheville. They fought to preserve the old jail building below the magnolia tree that now houses the free museum. And their story is quite intriguing, as well as all the insight they can give us about Wiccan magic and Wiccan beliefs and the power to make what seems to be impossible possible. The website is oldenwild.org. That's OLDENWILDE, oldenwild.org. There is a link at speakingofstrange.com. And they are both here in the studio with me. In fact, I think Diove is getting some coffee right now. So we will begin by saying, Lady Passion, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I've wanted to have you on the air for a long time.
Well, you know, we've been told we should be on your show for a long time. I was waiting to be asked.
Good, good. Well, the timing is perfect.
It is.
It could not be better. Mm-hmm. And so now tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, how you ended up here, and kind of your description of Coven Ovenwild.
Well, I came out as a public witch at 13 in 1976, the centennial year. And I endured a lot of stuff in Texas, a lot of backlash. Actually, a whole year of shunning. But, you know, I kept my stiff upper lip. And within a year, I was 14, and adults started coming to me for counseling, and they never stopped. And I just kept daily working it, working the magic, making it. It's a life thing. It's a daily working. I mean, every single day, you work the magic.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, you see the stars above, all that black stuff in between, that's what keeps things hanging together, and that's where the magic lies.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like
in the
that.
Quiet, silent, dark things
that
holds everything together. And so I became an expert. And in 1993, I started having drive-by shootings.
Wow.
I was a brouhaha for a Hispanic neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They loved me. They brought me chickens.
Okay.
They paid well. But some stuff started happening, and I'm like, oh, I got an 8-year-old daughter. I got to get out of here. And so I did a spell asking the gods where I should move, and they said Asheville. And I saw witches circling and doing magic, but I didn't know how to spell it, and I didn't know where it was. So I got out a map, and I turns out there are a lot of Ashevilles in the United States. Turned out to be the one with the two E's. So I came down here, I smelled it, I smelled Appalachian magic, you know, the old traditional ways, and I'm like, wow, I can smell the witches. And so I moved here.
So now
and
was...
We started Coven, we founded Coven of the Wild at Samhain on Halloween in 1994. And we went public, and the rest is history.
Now, what inspired you to understand more about magic and witchcraft at the age of 13? I mean, was this something that just came natural to you, or did you have an experience that showed you this was the right path?
Well, I was adopted, so I didn't know any of my people at that point. You know, they don't want you to know where you come from. which I think is really wrong.
Right.
As a human right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think magic is natural for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have natural talents and gifts if we just let it go and feel normal, you know, if we don't succumb to all those pressures from the outside telling us we shouldn't, couldn't, wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I truly believe that it's normal and natural for everybody. But for me, certainly, there was certainly a inline blood talent.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 20, I found all my people, my mother, my father, my brothers, and my sisters.
And were they involved in witchcraft?
4 out of 5 of the kids.
Wow.
I was the oldest. I was the firstborn. Mm-hmm. 4 out of 5 had practiced.
See, that's amazing.
And my mother. And my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And went back.
So it was meant to be. Genetically, it was in your blood.
It was.
Wow. Okay.
But it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can learn. Anyone.
Mm-hmm. And now we have Duve here. Am I saying it right now?
Duve. Well, it's a dead language, so your guess is as good as the scholars.
Duve, the sky god, right?
That's what it comes from, the name of the Oscan version of Jupiter, which mm-hmm. was before, you know, before the Roman Empire was founded.
Yeah, it's proto-Roman, right?
Yeah. But the reason I, you know, like that name is because you look at so many different deity names, and they're all the same word. Jupiter, Zeus, mm-hmm. You know, divine deity. They all go back to this Diu, D-A-O, and it's a universal god name. And so that was kind of, to me, that represented the interconnectedness that that really magic is all about.
So you now found it in an Ivy League school, college, right? You found the crap there?
Yeah, that was, well, basically, I went to...
Basically, as in Princeton, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I was actually a music major at Princeton, music theory, and I became really fascinated by Renaissance music and medieval music, and because I was always into history, and I discovered in reading old music theory that in the days before the so-called Enlightenment, scholars considered music to be part of a fourfold universal knowledge called the quadrivium, which means crossroads of four ways. And it meant music and astrology, which I took up shortly thereafter, arithmetic, which includes numerology, and then geometry, so like sacred geometry. And, you know, that's the art that built the cathedrals. That's the art that... you know, created so much of the music before, you know, like I say, before everything got kind of wiped out, all of that way of thinking, that interconnected magical way of thinking.
So it came from wealthy folks?
Well, no, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
No, they were middle class.
On the Western Coast, and
Come on,
came
my
from
dad
the
was
East
a Silicon
Coast.
Valley engineer.
Yeah.
Maybe wealthy by East Texas standards.
Yeah, definitely.
So now, were you at Princeton when you then determined this was the life path for you?
It was a little bit afterwards, really. I kind of stumbled my way into doing some spells while I was there, just experimentally. For instance, you know, I belong to what they call an eating club. It's like a fraternity, and people, you know, I was one of the officers there, and people kept cutting across our lawn and wearing this big trail through our lawn. So I thought, well, I'm going to experiment. I'm going to try doing something about that. So I took a piece of black thread and tied it in a knot and put it in the middle of the path. And I think I did a few other things too, but basically kind of the sort of thing you read about in books like The Golden Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right name? Golden Bough. And it worked. They stopped cutting across the field. Our lawn grew back, and I thought, wait a minute, that really worked.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. The reason that we're witches is because it works.
Sure.
Magic works. It always has. It always will. You can't kill it. You can't kill us. You can't make it die. In fact, it's burgeoning.
Mm-hmm.
According to 2012 projected census by the Religious Identification Survey, It's supposed to be the third largest religion in the United States.
Getting to be, yeah. If it keeps growing at its projected rate.
Its projected rate.
Yeah. Wicca, that is, yeah.
Well, now, in fact, you two authored the Goodly Spellbook, and this came out in the 90s, is that right?
2005.
No. Okay, 2005.
Old Spells for Modern Problems.
Okay, so now, what is the comparison between what, say, you as an individual or the two of you as a couple can do compared to the collective mentality of millions of people who are determining the path of a country, we'll say? I mean, because right now we have a recession, people are frustrated, nobody feels represented properly. Do you feel powerful enough to combat some of those forces?
I think what we did in this book and what we do every day, advocating for inmates nationwide, counseling people internationally, mm-hmm. empowers everyone. I think that freedom and empowerment are pivotal to what we do and what we're about, what witches are about, and the book. And yeah.
Now, living in a country that considers, or that many people consider a Christian nation, you know, a place where it's standard to put the Ten Commandments outside a courthouse or swear on a Bible, how difficult is it for you to be publicly accessible as a Wiccan?
Well, you know, it was at first, mm-hmm. and yet, by our activism, by our consistency, mm-hmm. by not just being all talk, but action, mm-hmm. consistent, I believe that the people of the mountains just want to know that you're real,
right?
Whatever you are. And if you're really, really real and sincere, they will accept you. They will embrace you.
Right.
Don't screw them over and don't mess it up. But if you're consistent and really careful about their feelings and looking out for them, they care about you.
It was a little dicey, though, when we first came here. Some fellow witches we knew in Madison County had a cross burned on their lawn, and then their house burned down shortly thereafter.
Wow.
So, incidents like that inspired us to hold the very first, as far as we know, the first in the nation, public Samhain or Halloween ritual in downtown Asheville.
In the nation, huh?
As far as we know, yeah, big public, public ritual.
We got national news media, extra, lots of people, blah, blah.
Well, we got to take our first break here, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the basics here of exactly what it is, simply enough, that you believe and how that this can be put into context for people who may not know much about Wicca. And we'll talk specifically eventually about what happened with the magnolia tree, and we'll work our way up to maybe some spells and advice that you could give to people who might want to try their hand at this. Right now, I'm talking with the priest and priestess of Coven Oven Wild, which they founded here in Asheville, Lady Passion and Deuve. And their website is oldenwild.org. That's wild with an E. And there is a link at speakingofstrange.com. Next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls as well. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains.
Thank you.
What do you know about Wicca? From people who not only are practitioners and leaders, but we're talking about people who put their blood and sweat and tears on the line. In fact, a little later when we talk about the magnolia tree, we'll discuss what it's like to live more or less 24 hours a day for 3 months underneath a tree because you are so adamant about saving it, and you finally do it. It actually works. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Magic is a real thing, just like thoughts are. And right now I'm talking with Lady Passion and Diove, and they are from Coven of and Wild here in Asheville, also authors of the Goodly Spell Book. Have you guys written any other books, or is this the big one right here?
Actually, we are offering a rare offering.
Okay.
Over your program, the first of its kind. In the season of feasting, we are offering Simply Savory Magical and Medieval Recipes written by yours truly, Lady Passion. It features Sabbat menus, all kinds of really wholesome food, no salt, no sugar.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. So if you donate $100 to save our Covenstead, it's tax deductible, and we will send you a free copy. Email us at oldenwild.org.
Excellent.
It hasn't even been published yet.
No.
So this is like advanced pre-publication copy before
wow.
we send it off to our publisher. Well, we'd like to get people's feedback, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a treat. Well, thank you for offering that to the listeners. That's wonderful. Well, now, for people who just really don't understand that much about what you do, let me start by saying, okay, there are, you know, atheists out there who say, look, this is it. What you see is what you get. There is nothing greater. There's no God. There's no devil. There are no goddesses. No. You, however, believe there are gods and goddesses and all kinds of other spiritual beings, right?
We do.
So let me start with you, Lady Passion. I'd like to get each of you to tell me in your own way, from your own perspective, what exactly does it mean to be a Wiccan?
Well, I'll say this, that I believe that monotheists and atheists need to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is there not none or one, there mm-hmm. are many, many, many.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys need to play catch up and start getting up quick. Because there are many goddesses and gods and entities and spirits and any number of beings. They are real. They exist. They always have. They've been documented up and down. And so what it means to me to be a Wiccan is to feel very empowered. And, you know, when people feel that they cannot go to their betters, they cannot approach powerful people in politics or, you know, as business people, they're just the same as you. And you need to have that strength of heart and the strength of gut to go, I'm just as good as you.
So now, where are these beings and what are they? Where do they live and how do they compare to us?
They're everywhere. They're on all kinds of vibrational levels. They're in every place. That might be some place where you live or some place where you go or something that you just experience. But you will know them when you do. I mean, it's like a dream you can't forget. And just nothing can tell you that. Only you know it when it happens. It's like seeing an alien.
Mm-hmm.
You know it when it happens.
Right.
And then you are forever changed, bettered, usually. And then you can help other people because of your experience.
So what do you think about that, DFA?
Well, I usually tell people the same thing. You know it when you experience it. But, you know, I think a lot about this. You can actually prove it. I mean, consider this. You know yourself from your researches that ghosts are real.
Right.
Well, what is a ghost? If especially if it acts with intention, it's a spirit, right? So therefore, something's surviving the body. Therefore, it's not just a matter of chemicals and electricity that we're walking around with. So if there is something spiritual that survives the body, then that implies there's a whole nother realm going on that's beyond this one, And we know from people who have experienced past life recall and been able to prove that their past lives were real, that that spirit goes someplace and comes back. Well, where does it go? Well, we know from people who have had death experiences that they encounter beings that are just vast and powerful and yet benevolent. You know, why should we disbelieve them, especially when there's such a vast, vast universe? I mean, you look at these pictures that Hubble takes of galaxies beyond galaxies, and we're supposed to say in our vast arrogance that, oh, no, what we know is all there is. You know, this little shell of, you know, boxes that we've built for ourselves that we inhabit. I mean, I find it interesting. The thing I find most interesting is that the most spiritual people are the ones who are in the most in touch with nature. It's when people are in nature and amongst all that diversity and vastness of life and beings and forces and so forth. Even when you're just hiking out in the woods, that's when you feel most in touch with that. But as soon as you get into that man-made world where we've sealed ourselves off from the heavens with roofs and from the ground with floors and each other with walls, and we just spend our lives in these manufactured caves, you know, well, no wonder we don't believe in gods anymore. No wonder we're lucky if we even believe in one, you know.
And this is why we did the tree sit, which is why we saved the jail. I mean, they're both good in their ways. The jail is old. It's old rock. It's beautiful. It needs to be preserved. It should be. But also the trees above, the pear. And so, I mean, what we did, and one of so many things we've done, like it was on our website, all the activism, comes from our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We act on them. We think you shouldn't just talk.
Yeah, we
should do.
Yeah, we don't just talk, but do. And one way we define magic is applied spirituality. I mean, you're not just reading about mysticism or studying it like a scholar would. You're not just preaching about it like a preacher would. But you're actually taking the principles and applying them, using them to affect change. And it's based on, you know, the same kind of principles that things like tarot and astrology are based on. The idea that there's these interconnected underlying patterns behind reality that you can access and understand. And
so how do you feel about people listening out there right now who say, oh, they're going to go to hell? They are witches. They're going to go to hell. How do you respond to those people?
Well, I think, man, life's tough enough. Isn't hell every day? In its own way. Who needs a made-up one in the afterlife? We
right.
just don't believe in that. We believe in the Summerlands, which is a place of rest where you go and you recoup and you have fun. And then you decide whether you want to decide or the gods and goddesses decide for you where you're going to reincarnate next.
Uh-huh.
When and where and how. What are you going to do? What do you need to do? So we call it the Summerlands, and that's what we believe. We do not believe in a hell.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty sad when people stop asking questions about what's really out there and start proclaiming that they know, that they've got all the answers.
Yeah, this is just what we believe. We don't know for sure.
Well, I mean, fundamentalists, you know, who claim that if you don't believe in what's written in their book, which or their particular translation of their particular chunk of a book, that you're going to burn in hell.
And literally, the Summerlands go back to Sumeria. It's ancient. It's an ancient concept. Not like heaven, but kind of nice enough. That's cool enough.
Yeah, I think that's really admirable that you said this is what we think, but there are all these people out there who say, we know, and those are the dangerous ones, the ones that try to force their beliefs on others, right?
And that's the thing that people don't understand about witches, that even now, we're still debating certain concepts.
Mm-hmm.
We're great debaters, right? Like, for instance, right now, we're still debating the concept of UFOs. How do we feel about it? What does it mean to us? What does it mean to our religion? What does it mean to people? We don't know yet. We're still working on it. I mean, it's a lively debate.
You know, that's a great place to pause for our next break, because I want to talk about UFOs and aliens and what the debate is about. And also, I'd like to ask you in particular, D of A, about astrology and how that it applies to the changes that are happening right now in the world. Everybody can feel it. Those who are insensitive can at least see the effects of it. What the heck is happening? When we come back, we'll dig into that and a lot more. I'm talking right now with Lady Passion and Diuve from Coven Oldenwild. They founded it right here in Asheville, North Carolina. They're also the authors of the Goodly Spellbook. And as you heard, if you go to their website, which is linked up at speakingofstrange.com, you also can take advantage of their new work before it's even published. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do? 'Cause it's witchcraft, wicked witchcraft. And although I know it's strictly taboo, when you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to.
Coming at you live from Asheville, North Carolina, the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. I am Joshua P. Warren in the studio with the high priest and priestess of Coven Oldenwild. We have Lady Passion and Diuve, and they are hand-fasted. In fact, that's sort of what most people would think of as married, right?
Yes. It actually was the precursor of the Christian wedding.
You figured it probably was, yeah. And so now, it doesn't matter in this day and age, legally speaking, does it? I mean, can you get hand-fasted and be considered?
I think the equivalent would be common law.
Yeah, something like that. So now also, let's talk a bit about the idea, as we mentioned during the break. There are people who don't really understand the difference between a Wiccan, a witch, a warlock, all that. Let's clarify some of those terms there. Are you a warlock, Diuve?
No, that's a Hollywood word. Mm-hmm. A witch is a witch, whether they're male or female. Now, there is a lot of Wiccans nowadays will say, well, warlock is someone who's an oath breaker, because some people think that's where the word comes from. But
as in they told secrets they shouldn't have.
Yeah. But probably, really, you go back, it's just an old Scottish word for witch that may have come from Swedish, where it means spirit caller, warlocker. Anyway, that's you didn't ask for an etymology lesson, but that's basically that's basically the story there. Now, Wiccan, that's the title for witches as a religion, and not all witches would identify themselves as Wiccans, but all Wiccans definitely are witches.
Yes, but some people who practice magic of some sort, even like a routine 8 times a year Sabbats, for say. Would call themselves pagan. Mm-hmm. So all witches are pagan, but not all pagans are witches.
Right.
Because sometimes pagans, they don't do a lot of ritual.
And so now, if somebody is listening out there right now who is not sure about his or her own belief, and they say, okay, am I a Wiccan? You know, how would they know right now? You know, I am a Wiccan because...
If you like candlelight, incense, wine, women, and song, dancing on a Sunday, and working magic to enable yourself and others, then you just might be a witch.
You might be a witch. Good. That's our new line of T-shirts then. Right? We will take off of the Jeff Foxworthy theme. Now, you, of course, as an astrologer, Diouve, you have sort of, I'm sure, taken a look at what's happening in the world right now, these massive changes. What is going on?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something that you won't hear from a lot of other people that write pop astrology, because there's a lot of yammer out there about the age of Aquarius and 2012 and all this. And, you know, without going into a lot of details, most of it's based on some pretty specious theory and ideas. But what I studied extensively as an astrologer was how cycles of planetary conjunctions, these big outer planets that take hundreds of years to move around the solar system, what happens when they come together in the sky. And I found that there were really definite correlations between those and major turning points in world history. Now, we had one of those most recently in around 1993, and the conjunction of planet Uranus and the planet Neptune. So what I did was, in the years leading up to that, I just buried myself in the UC Berkeley library and researched all of these conjunctions going back as far as I could find them in written history of Uranus and Neptune. What kind of pattern was showed up? You know, and there's 171-year cycle that they run on. Well, it eventually, once I'd compiled enough data, it was pretty clear. In this culture, at least, in Western culture, we've got a concept that goes way, way back to the Indo-Europeans called the, they call it in France the three estates. In India, they call it the castes. It's basically this idea that you've got these three layers to society. You've got this priesthood on top, which focuses on spiritual and intellectual matters. Mm-hmm. You got this aristocracy in the middle that focuses on war and government and such. And you got this commoners' economic class on the bottom that focuses on producing and farming and trading and money and so forth. Well, you look in Western history, and you can see that each of these castes or classes in turn has dominated kind of the culture. The age of faith, the Middle Ages, the church, the priesthood was in charge. Well, what happened to them? They got overexpanded. They got grabbed too much
loaded,
power,
corrupted.
too centralized. Yep, too centralized, and you know, people rebelled and they lost their luster, and people stopped believing in them, basically. Then the next one comes up. It's the Renaissance, the age of the princes and the courts and the nation states that arise, that exist today, England and France and whatnot. And that was the second one, the warrior, the aristocracy caste. So they too became, you know, overextended, over corrupt, over centralized. And you had the English lopping off Prince Charles I's head. Well, now let me point out at this point that in each of these cases, the big turning point came under one of these conjunctions. In 1307, you know, I was talking about the Age of Faith earlier. That's when the Templars were conquered by King Philip of France, and mm-hmm. that pretty much gutted the power of the church after that political power. 1650, that's when King Charles I, like I said, was beheaded, and that, you know, eventually led to the American Revolution and so forth. So where does that bring us now? Well, that third caste has been in charge for some time now. We call it the Industrial Age, mm-hmm. and it's the farmers became agricultural corporations, the merchants became bankers and stock traders, and so forth and so on. It's just the same thing, only very much centralized. Overextended.
So we think 1993, that it's coming back around again.
People are losing faith. It's
to the old religion.
Well, it cycles round. Yeah, that's what I found. It cycles round to another spiritual. In previous cultures where this has gone through this cycle, it cycles around to another spiritual thing. You know, that first function coming back in.
So the old religion is empowering. It's not suppressive. It's not repressive, not like the old monotheists. So we polytheists are very diversified very embracing of lots and lots of old and new ideas.
So when is this going to happen? When is the defining moment?
It's now. Going on now. It started then with the rise of the things like the, well, for instance, that's when basically the whole Osama bin Laden thing got started with the attack on the, I'm not sure if that one was the embassy bombing or the USS Cole. I always get those two mixed up.
But
it was
now.
It was the first of those.
It's being documented. And
the World Wide Web. Got started then. The quite a few things that are really undermining this whole faith that people have had in this centralized banking system and corporate system are going on right now. And what are they countering with? Well, look at the rise of fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. You know, you see this Islamic extremism as one.
On
of the
other hand, I just got an email yesterday. From an Islam woman who converted to witchcraft.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's something.
That is.
We have email from all over the world. And, you know, I mean, we didn't do it on purpose, but every kind of person has been really falling in love with our book.
Well, that's why I moved out here.
Well, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll have a few minutes left this hour. I want to talk about the UFO debate that's going on, and we'll also talk a bit about Samhain blessings. Gosh, so much. But we'll come back the next hour by also discussing how a spell should be put together, and maybe you have some advice you can give to people listening who might just want to test it out. To see if he or she can prove to him or herself that spells can work. And then, whenever we can, we'll squeeze in sort of your take on what happened with the magnolia tree there as well and how everything has turned out so positively now. I'm talking with the High Priest and Priestess of Coven Oldenwild, and they are Diuve and Lady Passion. The website is oldenwild.org. That's OldenWilde.org. And we'll dig into that and a lot more. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange. Next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to talk about all kinds of interesting stuff. But for the next few minutes here, as we wind down this hour number two, let me ask you, Lady Passion, what is the debate right now among Wiccans regarding UFOs and aliens?
Well, it's interesting because many of us are intuitive, and we go out in nature, and we just happen to be at the right place at the right time. And so many of us see these things. We see them. Mm-hmm. We experience them. And so then we report back to each other. But, you know, from the old ways, they didn't have aliens back in the old days.
Or did they?
Well, they did, but they didn't really write it down. You know, it's sort of painted on walls and trois fair and all that. It's still a debate. I mean, we're still working on it. I think the majority of us believe they exist.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not sure that they're deities. We think maybe they are a different kind of species. And that seems to be the shakedown.
Well, you know, it seems to me also that it must be confusing historically to try to differentiate between how an alien encounter, whether they're from another planet or another dimension, would be discerned from a spirit, a god, a demon, an angel, some other type of entity that you can call a million different names, right?
And I think the difference is that the deities that we encounter in dream or waking state manifest for us.
Mm-hmm.
They come by their names. They can be conjured with certain chants and offerings, and you know, but aliens can't be conjured. They're just sort of you're just there.
Yeah, a lot of people have tried. I know.
Yeah, I mean, you can try, but you really can't conjure them. You just got to be in the right place at the right time. It's a total happenstance.
Well, now, the balance that you mentally have with nature and the ability to creatively visualize things and make them manifest has, of course, in our culture, been condensed down to the Hollywood version of, you know, zap, it's like a parlor trick, let's make something appear, let's... Have you ever seen anything like that that is real?
I do it all the time.
Really?
And here's the thing. It's a trifecta trick. It's mm-hmm. a trifecta witch trick. You need three things. You need desperation, need, and what was that third thing? Desperation, need.
And calling on a deity, was that the third thing?
To do a little
need,
trick.
To manifest it in your hand,
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to be really focused, and you have to be really at the nth degree, your wit's end.
Well, I've found that like lately, I've been finding every time I misplace something, and like just today, it was my thumb drive. The other day, it was my cell phone on a field I was walking across.
The other day for me was pain medication.
Yeah.
The day before that, well,
and I prayed to the
actually, several months before that was some binoculars. We were out in the middle of nowhere. I needed binoculars to look at the plants. I said, I need binoculars.
Mm-hmm.
And I had three men right beside me. I looked down at my feet, and there they were.
Hmm. Well, what I was saying, though, was that third element for me is it's like I pray to the sun, the sun god, the soul. And, you know, in our experience.
When I manifested earlier, I prayed to Kuan Yin. So
okay.
I don't think it really matters.
But in our experience, you know, like beings like the sun are animated and have... You know, have a genuine spirit and soul that that can, you know, you can communicate with, and the feeling of praying to a god and actually feeling the communication. I realize it's just like when you're talking to someone, a human being, and you feel a connection. Suddenly, you feel like you're being heard. You know, or the little spark goes between your eyes or whatever, and it's
they
very
respond.
Same thing.
They
so,
respond.
So that's worked for me. I found that cell phone right away after I did that.
All right. Well, when we come back from this break, we'll talk more about spells and advice on how all of you can actually see for yourself how a spell works. We'll talk a little bit more about Christmas and paganism. Speaking of the Christmas tree, we'll discuss a bit about the Magnolia Tree episode. The importance of blessings in Samhain. The phone lines will be open. I'll tell you how you can call in here and participate in the conversation. I'm Joshua P. Warren with the High Priest and Priestess of Coven Old and Wild. It's Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains.